Jay Revel here. Welcome to another edition of the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce podcast. We are delighted to be with you again for another installment today. We've had a wonderful show, a great guest. Well, I think you're going to find this one wildly entertaining. No pun intended. Sarah, how are we doing? My co-host Sarah Solomon here with us as always. She's got us all mic'd up. She's got her headphones on. She's dialed in, ready to deliver another outstanding product. How are you?
I'm doing well. This podcast is the highlight of my day, and I'm excited and ready for the opportunity of the fiscal year ahead for the Chamber. I think that we have a lot of good things coming to you.
That's right, folks. Yeah, we had the rare coalescence today where our first day of the fiscal year happens to be the exact day of our annual meeting. So we've been up and wired since very early this morning, getting all that wired together and
fueled by coffee.
Yeah, a lot of fueled by coffee, lots of coffee. So if you're anyone who has been paying attention to our Total Resource campaign, maybe a coffee company should step in and sponsor the podcast. More on that later. But back to the item at hand, we have a great guest with us, folks. We have Michael Blatchley with us. Michael is the director of opening nights at Florida State University. Folks, you may remember the old phrase, 7 days of opening nights, back from, 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago. What FSU has done with their performing arts series is really incredible and remarkable, and we've seen a number of very talented people working in our community to make that program shine at the level that it does today. And Michael has been with us now for going on, almost 3 years now?
Starting my third year next month.
That's fabulous. Well, we've been very fortunate to have you in the community, Michael, and we're blessed to have you on the podcast today. So why don't we kind of jump right in? I know, I had the chance, I guess, to meet you. Gosh, I can't believe it's been almost 3 years. When you first came to town, you were, exploring a little bit about maybe the Chamber and heard your story a little bit. And as we were going through a variety of things to talk about through the fall, we said, well, we got to get Mike on here to talk about opening nights because you've just kicked off. How many seasons? What season is this now?
This is 22.
22. Season number 22. Very impressive. I was at the first show? St. Paul's, yeah.
That was the first one for the year, St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Oh, man, folks, if you weren't there, you missed it. If you were there, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know if his name, the lead singer, is actually Paul or not.
But it is.
I've seen him a few times, and he gets just outlandish towards the end of the show. He was up in the rafters, almost hanging off the balcony upstairs, singing in front of everyone, and the whole place was rocking, and what's so cool about opening nights is you just never know what you're going to get. You'll have such a diverse schedule. So why don't we jump right in there, Michael? Tell us a little bit about your background, your story. How do you come to be the director of opening nights here in Tallahassee?
Thanks, Jay and Sarah. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak on opening nights. And as my wife often tells me, if I can go door to door and tell everybody about our programs, we'd sell everything out, because I have an enthusiasm for what we do that sometimes I just don't know when to stop. And the other thing my wife will tell me is I tend to oversell things, because once I get to a certain point, people really believe that it's the thing to do. I was at the University of Florida for 15 years and expanded their Performing Arts Center from what was 14 events when I came in the year 2000, to when I left, we had 17 countries represented with over 80 events. We were commissioning new work. We were premiering works from world-renowned artists. We had expanded from a tradition of the classical and the pop stage to include world music, world dance, family, jazz, contemporary folk, young artists, theater, comedy, family, whatever we could do that would sort of broaden having something for everyone. We did country, we did bluegrass, we did rock, we did jazz. We used every venue that was available to us. And then I was consulting for a while privately. And my predecessor with opening nights, Chris Hecox, who I know and respect greatly, took the position to open the new Performing Arts Center at Auburn University. When he left, I was contacted by a former board member with University of Florida Performing Arts, Gus Corbella, a strong advocate for the arts in Tallahassee, who said, would your company be interested in doing the search for this position. And I said, I think there would be a lot of interest, but I need to let you know in terms of full transparency, I won't be involved in that because I am a candidate for the job. And that led to 3 years ago being employed and starting what we now have. Before that, I was fortunate. I worked as director of performing arts at UCLA. I was vice president and director of sales for Columbia Artists for the West Coast. I was with a theatrical production company doing Broadway tours. It was with the 1982 World's Fair, where I produced the World Festival and ran the performing arts series, which was 184 days straight, averaging 30 events a day.
Was that the Knoxville one?
I was in Knoxville.
Okay.
Well done.
I want to know more about that later.
All right.
Crazy ideas brewing over here, folks.
Continuing backwards, I was at the University of Hawaii, Colorado State University, University of Tennessee, and I've been doing what I do for over 50 years. Started when I was six, and I love it. It's great.
Okay, so tell me that. You started when you were six, so what was the first, just a backyard production of some variety or living room? What are we talking here?
Actually, it was getting friends together to sort of entertain parents, just to sort of make sure that they knew that we were staying out of trouble. Truly, in high school, started booking local bands, and from that created what were then Battle of the Bands, which was, you know, a chance to get the local groups together that each had a following. And, you know, you sort of create an environment, you create a market, you create a desire, you create a need, and it takes care of itself. Then through college, was doing booking engagements as an undergraduate, where I started bringing artists into the university, including, again, I was in Colorado at the time. There's a young guy in Colorado at the time that was sort of breaking out onto his own career and brought him in, a guy named John Denver. Another local guy out of Aspen who became an opening act for the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, who we presented. And this guy's name was Steve Martin. And just grew the program through the likes of the Fifth Dimension, the Letterman, and basically began to create a fit for a community where there was a desire for the arts, but not a lot of local, beyond the local regional acts, not a lot of touring national artists. And then it's grown on its own. It's been great.
Tallahassee certainly is lucky to have you. You've been all over the place. Is there any kind of highlight of your career thus far that is a moment in your head that stands out?
As a personal audience member, the moment that sort of is a benchmark is I was able to see the Beatles in their original North American tour in Red Rocks, Colorado. That will probably serve as an exclamation point on my entire career. That has led to a lot of other opportunities. And for a long time, Sarah, I was focusing more or less on rock and pop and staying in an area that I felt somewhat of a comfort level with. But over the course of time in my career, I expanded much more into the classical performing arts, world music, dance, including spoken word and art of articulation, as I like to refer to it, to begin to find something that would be available for every member of the community as an audience. That included family programming. It included programs geared towards children. And through that, then also artists who had made their name, their recognition through television, back when that was the primary form of media entertainment in our homes, as least as I was growing up, had the chance to work with Red Skelton and Bob Hope and artists who basically were a part of my living room. Mm. And from that standpoint, it grew into, again, a young guy, which I created the first music videos as we know them today, on the Ozzy and Harriet show, Ricky Nelson, and worked with Rick on occasion when he came out with his first band, the Stone Canyon Band, which had some members of Colorado that were a part of it as well. So it's evolved. It's grown.
Absolutely.
But beginning probably with the Beatles, I thought this would be a fun place to see if I can figure out a way to do this and convince somebody that I have done it and they'll pay me as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am.
Regular old impresario. I love it.
With a small eye, but yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I'm a big Jerry Weintraub fan. I've read a bunch of his stuff, seen his documentary. I just love it. So this is like This is very similar career trajectory. If you don't know who Jerry Weintraub is, folks, he was a legendary producer of all things very similar to Michael.
I worked with Jerry, actually.
I want to hear those stories.
On three Elvis Presley dates with Jerry Weintraub and Colonel Parker. And those were long days.
I will
share with you that. And Jerry was a master.
Yeah.
He was truly one of the guys who figured. There are legends in the presenting industry that come out of the sort of pop rock area, that Bill Graham and Jerry Weintraub. And this was way back before there was a network of promoters like we have today. There was no Live Nation. There was no AEG Live. The people that really now do the heavy lifting on tours like Celine Dion or an Earth, Wind & Fire Chicago package. I mean, they will literally buy up an entire tour, Rolling Stones, another one, and they will produce it. It's a single business for some of those guys now. Those days, it was the wild, wild west. We were all fending for ourselves, and between Bill Graham, Barry Fay, Jerry Weintraub, his business partner, Tom Hewlett, you basically created the deals as you went along, and you grew with it.
That's so cool.
Or you died as a result of it.
But. Yeah. Better today?
Different today. I think the one thing I can say, and ties in with the entirety of the chamber, is it's more corporate today. Whereas in the earlier days, it was a mom and pop operation. There was no set of rules and regulations and policies. It was fending for yourself, knowing a market, knowing how to price it, knowing how to gear what you were doing when you didn't have a business front, you didn't have a storefront, you didn't have a mechanism whereby you had built-in audience. You had to sort of grassroots ground up. And today the corporate infrastructure, which sort of came out of the whole Clear Channel and the growth of that, it's a much more sophisticated. This is tracking data is much more sophisticated today than it was in the early days, where it was a telephone call or a telegram. And today it's timeless.
It's very cool. Very cool. Let's talk about Tallahassee a little bit, if you wouldn't mind. Opening Nights is such a great organization. You said 22nd season. Can you kind of dig in for me about the history there? How has it kind of changed and evolved in 22 seasons? And what is it like today now that you're the director?
Thanks, Sarah. Yeah, the early days of 7 days of opening nights in Tallahassee was really created, supported, and given its life within Florida State University by President Dallenberg. And in fact, this season, our 22nd year, is dedicated to his memory, his having passed this summer. He really believed that the arts and the position of the live performing arts within a university overall is part and parcel with what you provide the community, whether it be the faculty and the staff that are working in the university, students who are attending, or the surrounding community. And I take that very seriously, and I view opening nights as sort of the front door to Tallahassee and Leon County as the mechanism whereby people can feel a place within Florida State that's theirs. Certainly athletics has it, and I think a lot of the public forums that happen are there. But from my vantage point, opening nights is truly the vehicle that lets that take place. My understanding is originally the 7 days were each dedicated to a particular art form. One day would be dance, one day theater, one day music, one day film, one day the visual arts, one day lecture, the spoken word, and that's six, and I don't recall what the seventh would be, but they were keystone, if you will, artists with significant donors around them and dinners following their engagement, etc. But it was literally a seven-day festival. Mm-hmm. And when I took over opening nights, I've got three grown sons. One of them said, well, who books closing nights? And I had to sort of talk them through that the opening nights is a historical reference point, and that we are now a 9-month, and will soon, depending on how the cards play out, be a 12-month operation. So opening nights is a concept more than it is a 1-week festival.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the breadth of performing arts that we see in Tallahassee today. I mean, in just this season alone, there's ballet dancers, there's musicians, of course. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, what you can kind of see on any given day in the community.
Well, as Jay mentioned, when we started, St. Paul and the Broken Bones opened our season, and we followed immediately with Sinatra, with Mac Dusk, a young Canadian who clearly has taken and personified the legendary Frank Sinatra voice and persona and stories in a way that really, really captured the essence of that. This week we have got Hip Lay Ballerinas, their first North American tour, a group that's combining hip-hop music and ballet. They are out of Chicago and out of an artistic director who really believes in this sort of as his extended family. Sadly, the particular artistic director had lost his wife and a child through disease and decided that his way to give back and to really support himself in the art was to create a school. He did. Outgrowth of the school is Hip Lay Ballerinas, first North American tour. And to the support of what we do by the Tallahassee community, probably by the night, which is 2 days from now, we will be sold out. So it's a great thing. And then we've got Christina Pato coming in as a Gaelic artist. She's part of the Silk Road Ensemble with Yo-Yo Ma. We've got comedians coming in from the likes of which are young and emerging comics up through those that have really established their career on the comedy stages and off-Broadway. Jazz programs, a young duo with a really strong background, Black Violin, that are out of South Florida. We're educated in our state. This will be their second time coming back with us. Legendary artists like the Beach Boys and the Righteous Brothers, as well as Kristen Chenoweth, who is a strong, strong Broadway vocalist that will be coming in. We have an all-male dance ensemble coming in, the Trox, if you will. This will be their second, if not third time here. They were here, I think, 5 years ago, and it sold out. The amazing thing is people tend to think of ballet as a female art form and that the men are there as essentially props or to help carry the prima in position. These guys have found that men can dance on point too, and they believe that the art form is to be shared by all. Talking shared by all, we've got a man coming in actually on Halloween, an illusionist by the name of Kevin Spencer, who believes strongly that no one should be marginalized, no one should be left out. The arts are literally for everyone. And Kevin, he and his wife, Cindy, had a very, very strong professional career. At the peak of the career, he stepped off the stage and decided to get into education and hospital work and began using arts as a healing tool and an educational tool for young people and people who were challenged with mental or sensory disabilities, and began putting programs together that involved them in a sensory-friendly way. This is following what we did last year with Parsons Dance Company when we worked with Gretchen Everhart School on a sensory-friendly program. Kevin will be with us for a week leading up to his performance. We're doing a Halloween evening performance where we're going to figure out with Kevin how to make it very comfortable for sensory challenged people by if there are costumes, they're going to be not the real horrific, edgy costumes. They'll be sort of lighter. We'll do a trick or treat, but it'll be the kind of treats given that are right for young people who are in this position. The pre-performance activity may involve activities like coloring and things just to warm them up and bring them in. Point of all this is the arts literally are for everyone, and we're finding people to help make that happen.
It's fascinating. It really, when you tell those stories, the background stories of some of these acts that come, it just, you know, it makes you realize that these people are coming from everywhere and have stories of their own that you, as a Tallahassee resident, get to witness in your own community. It's just fascinating. One piece of elementary curiosity when I hear you speak is, how do you find these people from everywhere and all walks of life? How do you and your team at opening nights recruit and find the amazing talent acts that you find?
I find the best response is the cliche, I am a sponge. I ask everybody for who they would like to hear. Green Sky Bluegrass.
Hey, amen.
Just got a word of that recommendation on that from Jay. I ask my peers. I ask people who are in the same position I'm in at other places. I ask artists that come and are with us. I say, who's exciting you that's out there right now? Who's up and coming that you feel would be the next art that you would artist you would like to see? I ask agents who they're excited about that's not on their roster. I ask, obviously, audience members and wherever I can get input, and then I pursue it. And then I start saying, you know what, this is a good fit. Obviously, the back end of that is the financial part of it, which it has to be doable. Opening nights, to a large extent, is self-funded. So we've got to be economically smart. At the same time, we're trying to be artistically and aesthetically sensitive and aware. So if you have ideas, please email them, send them, call. This year, we are doing at least 3 different programs, all of which have been recommended by members of our audience. And I will try on every year to at least have as many as I can that have come as a grassroots suggestion out of the community. We're currently working on the 2020-2021 season. We're well along with it, and it's not too late to get input for that season.
Yeah, it's super cool. Every time I have had the chance to go to an opening night's event, some of which have been ones where I saw on the schedule, wow, I've got to go, I love them, I've got to go see that. Others, and these have been probably the most delightful, are ones where I'll get a call from someone and say, hey, I've got an extra ticket. Would you all be interested in, you know, me and my wife going and are joining someone? And yes, when you go to one and you literally know nothing about the artist, those are the ones that just blow me away. The first opening night's performance I ever went to was the Prism concert. And folks, if you've never been to the Prism concert, it's associated with all the College of Music programs at FSU. It's pretty mind blowing. I won't spoil how those end, but they're really, really cool, especially if you're a big Knowles fan. But, you know, I saw Wynton Marsalis over at Lee Hall doing a Christmas show. In the last, after the show was over, he basically just walked out on the front of the stage and did a solo performance for 25 minutes, and it was mesmerizing. I saw Johnny Lang there one time doing a solo standalone blues guitar shows, Out of This World, J.J. Gray. Just every time you go, you literally, it's hard to walk out of Ruby Diamond or any of the great performance spaces that you all spread things around to without really kind of having your jaw drop.
Jay, to your first experience there, I will add as a point of information that Prism is Sunday, February 2nd, and it's the afternoon of Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, right.
And yeah, we are a football town. I get it, as is Gainesville, Florida. I get it. But what we have found is the afternoon matinee is a great way, if you happen to have young people around the house, to do something before the game starts because of the time changes. So that's, it's a great way. And Prism, I will also add, sells out every year.
Yeah, it's not to dwell on it, but you talk about football, and again, not to spoil it, but the end of the program almost feels like you're at a football game because it kind of turns into a pretty big pep rally.
Very much so.
All right, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it was one of probably the most surprising things I've ever seen in an auditorium, where I just was like, wow. I remember they hand you your earplugs. You walk in, and I'm like, what is this for? Again, won't spoil it from there. But
our real estate agent, my wife and I, as we moved here, our real estate agent, her first program this past February was Prism. Mm. Her response was, I had no idea. It's remarkable.
It really is good. Yeah, let's talk about venues for just a second. So Ruby Diamond Auditorium, or I guess we call it, what do we call it now? Ruby Diamond Performance Hall?
Ruby Diamond Concert Hall.
Concert Hall, there we go. Pardon me. What's the total seating in there?
For our discussion purposes, 1,200.
Okay, 1,200 seats. not a massive space by any measure. And you know, one of the things that has always been an ongoing conversation here in Tallahassee is, do we have enough space? And in you know, Ruby Diamond fills up pretty much year round, but between programs that you do, programs the College of Music does, programs that other departments plug into on occasion. But what's it like from y'all from a planning perspective to try to, you know, again, I know one of the things that's been great as the program has expanded is you really do reach out and use almost all of the major performance spaces in the community.
Jay, it's a challenge. We've got a good relationship with the others in town that are using this space as well, Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra, the Tallahassee Ballet, certainly the presidential events that take place in Ruby, and the College of Music. They got such incredible ensembles between the two symphony orchestras and the opera and the jazz ensemble and all the different entities. Ruby is probably the best used facility of its kind that I'm aware of in the country. We've got a very strong curricular program in the arts at Florida State University, and the public program, opening nights, needs to fit in with all those pre-existing commitments for the space. There's a shortage of spaces that size in Tallahassee. We could benefit from having a civic performing arts center. Challenge on that right now is the costs are not getting any lower with each passing year, and having previously worked in a consulting firm where we were doing facility planning and programming, you're looking in the basically from a low of 60 to a high of 90 or $100 million to try and create the kind of a space that would be convertible for everybody here that would want to use it. 1,200 seats, as we have in Ruby, is a great intimate space. It's a little small for what's happening right now with touring Broadway and some of the other productions that are out there, which you really need 1,800 to 2,200 seats to make it work. And at that point, you begin to look at how that measures up against other needs in the community. And as much as I can trumpet the support for a performing arts center, I understand clearly the other issues that we are facing in our county that would be a priority that would deter from that particular financial commitment.
No, yeah, that's very true. But it is important. You know, we can't tell you how many times we've had conversations with companies, with executives who, in their recruitment process for talent, sometimes it's people trying to get people to stay here, sometimes it's trying to bring people to the community, very often bringing people to the community. Opening nights is one of the top things that people will use as a recruiting tool. You know, y'all have great corporate support. Every time you go to a concert, I feel like I see a chamber member on stage introducing
right.
the performance. How important is that relationship for y'all's success?
Extremely important. It's critical for a community the size of Tallahassee to have investment from the business community because we cannot do it alone. The ticket sales comprise a good portion of what we use to function off of. And I try and equate it to where your purchase will help cover the artist fee. So all the ancillary expenses in that, and that means the staffing, the marketing, the rent for the facilities, paying the technical crews that we need, all that has to come from somewhere. That becomes our corporate sponsorship, our membership, money from the university that we get, which is, I appreciate extremely. But we are not fully funded. We've got to generate a lot of our own revenue. The businesses are critical in terms of the path that we walk.
You know, I that's incredibly valuable to know because, again, knowing some of the folks that have been regular contributors and members, and every time you go to a show at Ruby, you see a lot of familiar faces. And I think the other thing, you know, just to kind of bring it all full circle on the full reach of the programs you do is you do a lot of education. You were talking a little bit a while ago about some of that stuff, but give us just a scope that out for us. I mean, the outreach that you're doing into the community and how important that is for what you do.
Jay, it's extremely important. Referencing back to Matt Dusk, the young guy that was here that did Sinatra with Matt Dusk, did a class at FAMU. Daryl Tooks is the professor there that brought us in. professional musician in his own right, and it was the music business class. And Matt talked about the essence of the business side that people often forget when they come to a concert. You're coming to be entertained, or you're coming to be informed, or you're coming to be enlightened. The guy, women, groups on the stage are there because they are a business. So he began talking about the work with an agency, the work with the management, the work in terms of the change in record deals, with records now basically on, and what the streaming is, how you economize a tour, how you make ends meet, how, you know, we all know that travel is one of the places where inflation hits the hardest, between airfares, food on the road, hotels and lodging. Your expenses are a lot greater than what you ultimately see just by being on that stage. That was a great experience. Kevin Spencer will be doing a lot in terms of the communities that are sensory challenged. We will be having a master class with Slocan Ramblers that are coming and are going to be going to Leon High School, the bluegrass group out of Canada. They're going to be doing a performance there. We've got dance companies coming in to do master classes for the School of Dance at Florida State. When I got here, there were six educational events. Callum McNamara, who does our educational programming, we went from six. In my first year, last year, we had 35. This year, we've got half of the artists engaged have committed to doing an in-class activity, whether it's in the high school, whether it's in K through 12, we're doing Title I schools, we're doing the college and university, so wherever we can put the artist, we want it to be more than drive-by arting. We want them to invest in our community and in the young people that are here and make it work so that people say, I can do that. I can grow into this if I choose to pursue that as a career.
Drive-by arting. I like that phrase. Mm-hmm. Michael, we so appreciate you taking the time to come and have this conversation with us. It's been absolutely fascinating. One thing I'd like to kind of throw a curveball here in at the end. As a person who has seen so many types of performing art, music, spoken word, comedy, all the things that you say that still goes on today, what is your favorite genre, as I would say? What do you think is the most personally fulfilling after you've seen everything you've seen?
I used to play baseball, and the reason I actually stopped when I got to college is because I couldn't hit the curveball. But now that you've thrown it, I'm going to swing. To me, with the history I have in this field, it's roots music. It's music that goes back, that traces how we got to where we are. We were talking before we decided to turn the microphones on about the Ken Burns special on right now, dealing with country music. Country music has become the new pop music of our culture. Yet you watch this 8-segment Ken Burns special, it's history. It goes back to the Depression. It goes back to days when people were literally using music as a means to round out their lives emotionally, socially, personally. The history of those artists is like reading the history of our politicians. Roots music provides the roadmap of how we got from there to here. Seeing the Beatles doing a Buck Owens song provides a link to the past that one would not have necessarily known about. But it shows, you know, I mean, using the Beatles as an example, so much of what they did came out of the rockabilly era. It came out of the folks who were doing the sort of outlaw country music in those days that they turned into skiffle music before they became the pop phenomenons that we know changed the world forever musically. Same thing can be said for jazz. I'm not as knowledgeable about jazz, but I do know that the history and the blues, mentioned earlier, the Johnny Lang, that the blues, the Delta blues, the blues out of Chicago, out of Memphis, jazz out of New Orleans, in the broadest sense, that too is roots music. It's how our artistic sensibilities as a country has grown into what we have as the soundtrack of our lives.
Jazz is one of those things you don't have to know a whole lot about to enjoy. Just go get some Miles Davis kind of blue going and sit back and relax. But Man, I could sit here and do this for probably a couple of hours. I love talking live performances, and like I said, the lifetime of an impresario is fascinating to us. So, folks, sorry we have to cut you off, because we're probably going to keep talking about it after the show's over here. But, Michael, can't thank you enough for being with us. What a fabulous show. Oh, yeah, and anything before we, you know, cut the mics off and keep talking about all this that you want to add?
Thanks, Jay. One closing thought goes back to your question about the venues in town, the spaces. I will, as strongly as I can, encourage the conversation and the dialogue going forward about a performing arts center for Tallahassee. The need, it's a little analogous to talking about schools. When a school gets overcrowded, the logic is you either have to extend the day into split sessions or you have to build another school. We're at the point where our community could really benefit from another key performing arts center, equal in size, if not greater, to Ruby Diamond Concert Hall, because the growth is imminent and the community is ready.
I would agree with that. I think we've seen how powerful those types of centers can be in other communities, and it's certainly something that feels like is maybe more ripe today than it has ever been as far as the need goes. And as long as we have folks like you and others who are bringing such great productions to our community, I think the likelihood of that occurrence coming to fruition is only going to get higher. So once again, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for all you're doing. Thanks for bringing such great, amazing, world-class talent to our community each and every day. And if folks want to go learn more about this season and all things opening nights, where would you like for us to send them?
The easiest place is our website, openingnights.fsu.edu. Anything you need to know is there, and it also gives you a chance to tell me what you would like to see and hear.
Mm-hmm. And we would encourage you to do that, folks. Let Michael and their team know. I think, you know, the community aspects of opening nights is just something that's really cool and impressive. And again, thanks for being with us. Thanks for all you do. Thanks to your team. Every time I go to a performance, I truly walk out impressed. And I think it's incredibly important to have something like that in our community. So
you keep coming. We'll keep impressing you to the best of our ability.
You got it. Well, folks, as always, thanks for listening. We appreciate you and all that you do to help keep our Chamber of Commerce up and running so smoothly. As I mentioned earlier, our Total Resource campaign is well underway. You can go to our website, www.talchamber.com. That's talchamber.com, to learn about all the things that are going on in the world of business here in our community. And you can learn about ways that your company or your organization can get involved. We would love to have you. We'd love to have you. If you've got an idea to follow in your footsteps, Michael, if you have an idea for a podcast show or think maybe your story is interesting, let us know. We'd love to have you on. We'd love to have a conversation. Every time we sit down with someone, we learn something new. And maybe next time that will be with you. As always, we would appreciate it if you subscribe to the podcast on any of your favorite listening devices. Leave us a review. 5 stars are preferable, but we'll take any we can get. And thanks, as always, for listening. We do appreciate you, our audience, and our membership. And we will look forward to bringing you another exciting episode very soon. Take care, folks.